Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome. Hi, I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly. Oh, so excited to be here.
Oh, my
today.
Gosh, Kelly. I haven't done the show remotely with you in, like, I think it was 2 years ago.
I was thinking that. Month. I think it was 2 years ago when we, like, just started. Isn't that nuts?
I know.
I miss seeing your face.
I know. We're not sitting next to each other, but that's okay because I'm here. I've had like a little bit of back problems again, but doing well and happy to be on the show anyway.
Yes.
How are you, sweetie?
Everything's okay, except for 2 minutes before the show, I slammed my finger in the door. And it was like one of those like cartoons where you're like, ah, and you're like shouting in your head. Like that's exactly what kind of went down. But other than that,
Are you really okay?
Yeah,
like, are you really okay?
Yeah, it's fine. It's not
we don't need to like helicopter you into a,
to
a hospital or something.
No, I don't think I broke it. It was just one of those like, you know, wake up calls. That's how I'm going to look at it. Like to slow down, and it's perfect for our show today. But no, other than that, everything else is good. Let's see what's been happening this week.
Happening this week is you're like the best friend on the planet. I just have to say you are the best friend on the planet because I was a little down this weekend and you drove out to my house to make sure I was okay. You're like the sweetest thing ever.
That's how I feel about you. That is how I feel about you. And I know that like you would have done the same exact thing for me. So, you know, you're just an incredible friend and I was happy I could be there and I adore you. So it was my pleasure.
Well, thank you, honey.
So, yes, yeah, so everything else is good. I'm trying to think, like, what other crazy news? It was so funny. When I went up to pick up, you know, my son yesterday, it was 100 days of school. And so what they had the kids dress up as is, like, 100 years old. And so I guess they had done it in the morning, but they left his hair a little bit white. And I saw him, and it almost looked like lice. And I got really freaked out. And I was like, London. I was like, what happened? And he's like, what? And he like couldn't remember. And I was like, you know, there's something in your hair. I'm like, does it itch? He's like, yes. And I'm like, oh my God, does he have lice? It was so funny. And then I see a school teacher and she's got white hair and it clicked. And I was like, oh my God, did you put white in his hair? And she's like, yeah. And I told her the story and she was laughing. But, you know, I had a little bit of a heart attack just thinking like, oh my God, we've got to wash everything. And here it comes.
Oh, no.
But yeah, thank God. It was just the white hair. So
the lice thing. It's
I know.
Thing. It happens.
It's the worst.
Right? At some point in your kid's career at school, it's going to happen.
You know,
like,
what?
It happened. Tiffany, same thing happened. At one point. It's like, ah.
I think with girls, though, it's different. First of all, I thank the Lord. I've never gotten it as a kid, ever. So I'm hoping that maybe it's just like a Miller family thing that we'll never get it. And we'll keep it that way. Especially because they're boys.
Yeah, I like the plan.
Yeah,
yep,
exactly.
Yep. But even so, you still may have to get that little fine tooth comb.
Oh, God.
And, you know, just remember, you might have to pick them out one by one. Okay, we won't be graphic like that. That's really sick. Okay.
Wow. Well, let's talk about last week.
We had a great guest today. We had a great guest last week.
Yes. I loved last week's show. It was really cool. It was Lisa Loving's Dalton. She is so cool. A stunt woman who wrote the book Falling from the Stars. And she talked to us all about her life as a stunt woman and kind of her wake-up call when she got an injury and realizing, you know, she didn't want to do it anymore and wanted to do different things with her life. But it was just absolutely really cool to hear all the stories.
You know what was so sad for me? Is that we didn't really get to hear much about her actual recovery. So,
yeah.
You know, I think people should go get that book because, man, she has had a tough life. But good. She's like really learned how to turn lemons into lemonade or chicken shit into chicken salad. Any of those things. She did it.
She did it. Yeah. So thank you, Lisa, for coming on the show. It was really wonderful. And again, her book is Falling from the Stars. So today I'm so excited because I feel like both of us need this, you know, that the mindfulness and sort of getting into the moment. And we have a wonderful, wonderful guest today. We have Susan Kaiser Greenland, and she is the author of Mindful Games. And I will read her bio. Susan Kaiser Greenland developed the Inner Kids Mindful Awareness Program and is an internationally recognized leader in teaching secular mindfulness and meditation to children, parents, educators, and clinicians. Research on her Inner Kids program has been published in the Journal of Applied School Psychology. Susan is the author of The Mindful Child and Mindful Games, and also a corporate attorney who represented the ABC and CBS-owned radio and television stations for many years. While working as a lawyer, Susan volunteered in schools teaching mindfulness to children until she eventually left her law practice to teach mindfulness to kids and families full time. In 2000, she established the Inner Kids Foundation with her husband, the author Seth Greenland, bringing mindfulness awareness to underserved schools and neighborhoods. Quoted in numerous magazines and newspapers, including the New York Times, the LA Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Washington Post, USA Today, Real Simple, and Parents Magazine, she has also written for Huffington Post and other publications. Susan and her husband live in LA and have two grown children. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Very cool.
Yay. Hi. Oh my gosh, attorney turned mindfulness. Like, come on, tell us about that. That's awesome.
Well, you know, I was one of those people who actually enjoyed practicing law. I didn't hate law like some of my colleagues do. But, you know, I did find it stressful, which was one of the reasons that I really stayed with meditation. I started meditation because there was a family health crisis. It wasn't me, but I wanted to manage stress and anxiety, which I guess I could talk to you guys about. You could help me with that. But I've always struggled with anxiety, and so meditation really helped me with that. And then it really helped me in my law practice as far as just keeping balanced and able to juggle a whole bunch of things, because I was a mother with young children at the time, too.
Mm. So, okay, well, let's explain the concept of mindfulness for kind of the lay listener who may not totally know what that means. So can you kind of explain what the difference is between mindfulness and meditation? I think a lot of people think they're synonymous. And so, yeah, maybe you can just give us a little background.
Yeah, and that's a great question. And I think it's the most important question people ask if they're out there shopping for a mindfulness book or a mindfulness program or a mindfulness class, because mindfulness has gotten very, very popular. You know, when I started practicing mindfulness and taking it into schools, we sometimes had to go in and garden and then slip in a little bit of mindful breathing in there, but we would never be able to go in as mindfulness programs. We would go in as something else and then just kind of stealth mindfulness and get it in there. Mm-hmm. And since then, that was only about 10 or so years ago that we were in that state. But now mindfulness is a buzzword, and it's popular, and it's on the cover of Time magazine and in every major newspaper. And that's fantastic in so many ways. But in a couple of ways, it's problematic. And one of the ways it's problematic is that these definitions have all gotten kind of scrunched together and messed up and blurred. So I can go through three of them right now, which hopefully will be helpful and kind of sort out the confusion. The first one is something
please.
I call...
She said, yes, please.
I said, yes, please.
Oh,
yes,
okay. Yes,
go.
Sorry, I missed that. There was a little bit of a delay there. So the first one is mindfulness, what I call mindfulness with a capital M. And that's the mindfulness you hear all about, which is a way of being in the world where you navigate life's obstacles with attention, with balance, and with compassion. It's an innate quality that all of us have, and it involves really being present in the moment. So that's what this sort of general idea of mindfulness with a capital M is. It's a way of life, and because of that, it gets applied to all sorts of things. But when you look at mindfulness, which is kind of like mindfulness with a small M, but it is by no means a small skill to have, the type of mindfulness that is used in contemplative training or the practices upon which these secular mindfulness-based games and activities come from, that mindfulness with a small M is a stance of attention. It's a stance of attention where we pay attention in the moment with an open mind and with curiosity. Mm-hmm. And we basically know where our minds are, and what our state of mind is in real time. So there's the two different kinds of mindfulness that often get confused, which is this more mindfulness with a capital M, which is not really the classical definition, but has become a popular definition of a way of being in the world. It's an innate quality, and we can navigate life. And what your state of mind is in real time. So that's mindfulness. And then there's meditation. And often people think mindfulness and meditation are the same thing, but they really aren't. And meditation, there's all different kinds of meditations. Every contemplative tradition out there has one or more types of meditation. So I can't really give you one definition of what meditation is, but I can say the type of meditation that I teach and that many, many people teach in the secular world is that it's just a way of becoming more familiar with or better acquainted with our minds. So it's a direct way of working with our minds in which we just become more familiar with them and get to know ourselves better. And so that's how I define those three words, or those two words.
Right. Okay. You know what? I think we lost Dr. Deborah. So if you can just hang tight 1 second, I'm going to try to get her back on the line. So hang on one
sure.
second. Okay. Okay. I'm not the most I'm okay, but I'm not the best with tech. And for some reason, this is super complicated. So hang on 1 second. Let me just grab her.
If you think it would be better to reschedule, I would be happy to do that.
Oh, no, we're on live. You're on.
Oh.
yeah, you're on. So just hang on 1 second.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's all good. Okay, hold on 1 second. Let's see. Okay, she should see. Okay, it looks like it's dialing.
Hey, okay, well, carry
okay,
on.
You
sorry.
Back. Okay, great. Okay, she's back. I'm sorry about the little technical issue. Okay. So, all right. Well, she gave us a great explanation of both. So I know that a lot of people have been talking a lot about ADHD and autism and everything like that. And I guess I would love to know your thought about how mindfulness can help with those disorders. Because I know that there's just, you know, record levels of these issues, and I think it's really important for people out there to realize how mindfulness can play a part, and for teachers and parents and things like that.
Yeah, of course, and my answer would be that it helps people with specific who are working or navigating specific challenges the same way regardless of the challenge. And so it doesn't really matter whether it's somebody who's on the spectrum with autism or whether it's somebody who is on the less regulated side of the attentional spectrum. Mindfulness does a few things in the tech. The end result is the goal is the same, just the skill set to lead these activities is a little bit different depending on the population you're working with.
Okay.
And what I like to think of is that mindfulness is a bit of a 1-2 punch. And I know punch is a funny word to use in connection with mindfulness, but it works in this context. And that what happens with so many people, whether they're young or old, is that they don't really have a general understanding of the nervous system. And so possibly the very first thing that mindfulness can do for anyone, but especially people who are navigating certain challenges, is that it gives you the understanding and the language and the skill set to be able to start to view your own experience and other people's experience through the lens of the nervous system. So once kids and parents understand that when somebody is all revved up, then their capacity to be able to think clearly, to be able to think flexibly, to be open to new situations, that capacity really, really narrows and shuts down. And that's when you see people in a very rigid, inflexible state, like we see many of our commentators on TV now, or those of us who are looking at the TV screaming at it over certain political situations, regardless of which side of the aisle you're on.
Sure.
But what mindfulness can do is when you start to notice that your feelings are taking over, when you start to notice what we call emotional hijack, what you can do with the development of that stance of attention we're talking about, the mindfulness with a small m, is you can learn to direct that attention away from what you're thinking about into a present moment experience. And that present moment experience could be the sounds in the room. Mm-hmm. It could be the feeling of breathing. It could be the feeling of your feet against the ground. It could be a word or counting or a mantra. Or it could be a picture in your head, a visualization. Any of those things, what that has the capacity to do is it reverses or turns around emotional hijack, and it has a way of bringing down the nervous system, de-escalating that overly excited nervous system, so that your capacity to think clearly, to think flexibly, to be more open to newer ideas opens up. Now, in the case of somebody who's got attentional issues or executive functioning issues, there needs to be some work often to, or frankly for anybody, to develop the attentional skill necessary to be able to grab your attention away from what it's stuck on, mm-hmm. Whether that worry in your head, and move it away just for the moment into a sensory experience with an open mind and without judging yourself, and being able to just relax and move your attention away from what you're spinning about into a present moment experience. And the specific games and activities that mindfulness teach actually are shown now in emergent research, certainly with adults and early research with kids, to actually build that type of attention, that executive functioning.
Oh, that's great. This would be so
good. I still love what you're saying. And, you know, it's not just even for kids. It's for all of us. My gosh, I can think about so many times during the day that I get activated. When you're talking about the nervous system, it's like, wow, did I just really have that reaction? And just trying to calm down sometimes is so hard. So it's so wonderful to have a bunch of tools in your toolbox to just pick from and say, oh, I can use that. I can use that. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, one of the misunderstandings that often happens with mindfulness is people think, oh, it's all about not having those emotions. And if you actually meditate or you practice mindfulness, you're not going to have those strong emotions anymore. That won't happen to you. And, you know, you can just ask my kids. They will tell you that mom still has those kind of, you know, the emotional hijack happens around this house, too. But the beauty about the mindfulness skills is it teaches you to notice it early, mm-hmm. and it teaches you something you can do about it.
So I'd like to know kind of, can you walk us through a little bit about sort of how you thought about this program? Had you always thought about inner kids? Did you think, or was it, you know, just seeing your kids growing up with other kids? Wow, we really need this in the classroom. I want to know how kind of the idea was developed.
Well, I had been practicing meditation myself, and at that time I was really learning mostly attention practices, because there's all different types of meditations you can learn. And I had two children who were pretty young at the time. Now they're grown, but when my youngest was in, you know, kindergarten-ish, a little bit before, I mean, he was a very high-energy boy with a lot of excitement, and it was tough for him to focus. And my daughter was a few years older, and she was very, very hyper-focused as far as her academics and all. And so I started thinking, geez, I wonder if any of these practices that I'm doing as an adult could help them, because the mindfulness practices don't only teach the focus aspect of attention, they also teach the relaxation aspect of attention, so that you learn, it helps people who are very focused, who tend to get a little bit uptight around that and maybe stuck or narrow, and it helps people who are very distracted, and it helps everybody in between. So I thought maybe some of these things I was learning as an adult that had been so helpful to me could help my kids. I have studied Buddhist practices very seriously over a period of years, but I am not a Buddhist per se, and my husband, my mom was Presbyterian, my father was Catholic, my husband is Jewish, and my kids were bar and bat mitzvah. So I come from this tossed salad religious background, and I love it and I embrace it. But all of the places that worked with kids for mindfulness and meditation back there in the early 1990s were Buddhist centers. And we tried going to a couple of them, but it just didn't work for our family. So I had to try to figure it out myself. So I started just working, you know, trial and error with my kids.
Mm. I love all the games in your book. And again, we're talking with Susan Kaiser Greenland. She's the author of Mindful Games. And I wanted to say, too, my son has a program at his school called Mind Up. Have you heard of that?
Yes, that's Goldie's program. It's a great program.
When they told me that they were doing it, Dr. Deborah, so they basically implemented this mindfulness program in my son's school, and I was like doing yoga cartwheels. Like, I was so excited because I think that it's so good for them. I feel like they all really took to it and really liked it. And my son would tell me about the things he would do. And I think it's wonderful. So is it like a competitive program to yours, or is it the same idea and just at different locations in LA?
Well, I've known Goldie since we both kind of started this pretty close together. I think she started Mind Up a few years after I was doing Inner Kids, and we had many, many meetings and dinners and lunches and walks in the early years. Her visions and my vision were very similar as far as substance and very different as far as scales. I mean, from the very beginning, Goldie was saying, I want to see mindfulness in every school. And at the very beginning, I was saying, you know, I really want to stay home and work on these specific games and really get the details down. Mm. So it was really a wonderful we didn't collaborate with each other, but it was a wonderful complement to each other. So you can't really practice mindfulness for as long as I've done it and for as deeply as I've done it and view these other programs that you have high regard for as a competitor, mm-hmm. because it really completely undermines the point of mindfulness, right? Sure. Because mindfulness isn't just about developing attention. Mindfulness, ultimately, once we are able to have that attentional capacity and once we are able to kind of quiet our nervous system and open up our minds when we're getting constricted or narrow-minded, then what we want to do is we want to live in a kinder and a more compassionate world where everybody kind of gets the benefit of a more open-minded, more relaxed approach. So if I said, Goldie's program is a competitor to me, I mean, that would be completely inconsistent with what I teach. I just want mindfulness to be out there in an authentic way, everywhere it can, and whoever brings it, you know, I want to support them. Mm.
And Kelly and I are like totally about abundance, right? It's all about abundance. There's enough for everybody. Exactly. There's something good in everybody's message. We all have something really cool to say, yeah?
Yeah, that, and it's not a zero-sum game. I mean, that's one thing. You know, if I had known this when I was first a young lawyer, I mean, now it's been a long time since I was a young lawyer, but if I had really realized early on that in my professional career, that these things that seem like if she gets that, I will not, just really don't align with the way the world actually works. And I don't mean this in a hippy dippy, new agey California way. I just mean that.
That's okay. We like that. Don't worry. We like hippy dippy. Kelly's a Maryland Baltimore girl, but I'm a California girl. I like hippy dippy. That's good.
Well, you know what I mean? No, generally speaking, you know, very little in life is a zero-sum game, but we are kind of programmed to think that it is.
Go ahead. I don't want to cut you off.
No, go, Kelly. Go, go, go.
Okay, so I'm wondering, I guess, just for parents or educators listening, because I'm absolutely in love with all the games, but for those who don't have the book yet, can you give us maybe a couple simple exercises or games that parents or teachers can use with kids today?
Sure. And one of the things about teaching kids that is different from teaching adults is that the games and the approaches to the games vary a little bit depending on the age of the kids. So let's start with the young ones. And one of my favorite games for really little kids is that when they're feeling what we're talking about, overly excited and upset, we use breathing on purpose as a way to help calm down that nervous system. So how we do that is we pretend that our forefinger is a candle and or flower, depending on which part of the game you're in, and you hold up your forefinger and you breathe in through your nose as if you're smelling the flowers, breathing in, and then you blow out through your mouth as if you're blowing out the candle. Ooh, and when you use this, is you use this at those times that your child is going, you know, and can't catch their breath. And we know that an emphasis on the out-breath and a little bit of extending that out-breath for a long period of time, we know that that has a way of slowing down the heartbeat and calming down the nervous system. So we breathe in through the nose and we smell our flowers. We blow out through our mouth and we blow out the candle. And we do that for a few times with as long of an out-breath as we can. And usually the sobbing will settle down. As kids get a little bit older, and to provide a little bit more of a challenge to them, you can have them blow out the candle as if they want that candle to be flickering, not as if the candle's going to be blown out entirely. So that requires a little bit more control and also just helps the effectiveness of the exercise. So that's one of my favorites.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to totally
lovely.
Use that.
I
yeah.
know. I'm
going to use that with my kids.
And I want to talk about pinky pointing. That's like, I looked in your book and like, pinky pointing? I love that. Tell us about pinky pointing.
Well, pinky pointing is great. And the little kids like pinky pointing. Sometimes the older kids think that that's a little silly. So then we call it thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways. But it is a wonderful way, if you're working with groups of kids, to facilitate a conversation without using a lot of words. If anybody's been in a classroom or facilitated a Girl Scout troop or a Boy Scout troop or a Sunday school class or anything like that, you know that when you start asking kids questions, you can just get in a whole lot of conversation that can be fun and funny but take up a lot of time and take you off task. So with this game, you're able to do a few things. You ask a question like, is it easy or is it hard to sit still right now? And then you ask the kids to respond by with their fingers, with a gesture, rather than with words. And on the count of three, they either put their pinky or their thumb, if they're older, up, if it's easy to sit still, down if it's hard to sit still, and sideways if it's in between. So you count one, two, three, they put their hands in the air, and then here's one of the most interesting teachings. Then you say to the kids, hey, take a look around the room. Does everybody feel the same way that you do? And it's a real aha moment for the kids because they look around, they say, hey, I may be having a really easy time sitting still, but look at some of my friends are not. And then the other way around. And then that's the first teaching that we have in mindfulness class, is that we want to look at life experience with an open mind and with curiosity and without a preconceived notion or bias. So you start with something like, is it eat? I'm sorry?
Oh, I was going to say, this is awesome. This is empathy building.
Yes.
I love
yeah.
this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, you know, you start with something like, is it easy or hard to sit still? And then you go into more complicated questions, like if you're trying to settle a dispute, or if two kids are having an argument, you know, do you see this? How many people feel this way? How many people feel the other way? How many people feel in between? And then you can look around, and very rarely does anyone in the class feel on their own. And of course, as the facilitator, you always put your hand up last. So you look around and think, if there is one or two children who have an answer that's different than the rest, you make sure that your pinky or your thumb is going in that direction so that they feel like, oh, they're not the only ones feeling this way.
I absolutely love this.
Beautiful.
And
yeah, compassion, empathy, I love it.
And
thank you.
So I've
so much fun with the kids.
It really does. And I've heard of your other book, The Mindful Child. And so how does that book differ? I'm just curious. Is that a deeper understanding of mindfulness?
Yeah. Yeah, The Mindful Child, I wrote earlier on. And so The Mindful Child tells more of the story of what it was like to be a young mom with young kids. And there's more of a narrative in that book than there is in the Mindful Games book. There is some overlap with the book, but the games developed over time, and so they're a little bit different, and they're basically fit within a grid within Mindful Games. Mm-hmm. And then there are some games in the Mindful Child book that are not in the Mindful Games book. And the theory and the ideas around the general practice of mindfulness are fleshed out a little bit differently. So when I teach using both books.
This is fantastic. I just love this. And I love also in the back you put the frequently asked questions. And I was going to ask, it was so funny because I was going to ask this, and then it was in the FAQs, and you asked about, you know, what do you do if kids feel frustrated and say, it's not working? Because I can absolutely hear my kids saying that. So I'm curious, yeah, how you deal with that.
Well, one of the things that's most important is just to remember yourself that often the benefits take a long time to show up, and that often the benefits just aren't that obvious at first. And that's why it's so very important that we, when we're teaching mindfulness to our kids or sharing mindfulness with our kids, that we start with ourselves. And that doesn't mean you have to go on a 3-month retreat, you know, someplace as a meditation retreat, but just short periods of practice frequently ourselves, so that we have a general sense of what we're doing before we ask our kids to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's a big surprise for people, because, you know, if we want our kids to play piano, we can hire a piano teacher to come in, and we don't need to learn to play piano ourselves. But it's not exactly the same with mindfulness and meditation, and so it's important to learn ourselves. And then once you learn yourself what it feels like when things aren't working, and what it feels like when people are frustrated, or when it's frustrating, then it's very easy with kids to just contextualize it for them and give them different ways of trying to achieve the same objective. So, for instance, if you really want to help use mindfulness to help calm down when you're upset, well, frequently people find that sitting still when they're upset is not calming, but it's more aggravating or agitating. Mm-hmm. So then you have a whole bunch of different options you can give them. You can give them moving a little bit, or doing a different type of a practice, and that sort of thing. So when people are saying it's not working, having a variety of options that you've tried yourself so that you can kind of work it through with them, that will really help.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
It's kind of like what you're saying is, oh, sweetie, it's not working right now, but it will if we keep trying, kind of like mm-hmm. building a muscle, right? You can't necessarily lift that weight right now, but if you keep practicing, it will happen.
Yeah, it's very much like that. It's very much like that. And that might be what I had put in the frequently asked questions, is something that I tell the kids a lot, is I can tell them that, and it involves a little social white lie. I tell them that I'm working out with a trainer, and that's the little social white lie. I'm doing light weights, and then I'll say, hey, can you tell the difference? You know, look at this, and have them feel my arm, and can you feel the weights? And they'll say, yeah, Mrs. KG, I can feel the weights. And then you can feel you doing the exercise. I say, well, look at it. I can pick up a little bit here, but could I go out there and pick up the car? And they'll say, no, why would you be able to pick up the car? You're not that strong yet. And I say, well, that's a little bit like what happens with mindfulness and meditation. Mm-hmm. You may have started, and it may have been really working when things weren't really upsetting, but you're developing a muscle, and soon you'll be able to use mindfulness when you have to do the emotional equivalent of pick up that car.
Mm. And are you...
And I can talk. Totally relate. I mean, I've been doing my yoga and Pilates recently, and it's like, wow, sometimes I punch myself in the gut and go, oh, that's stronger. It's like, oh, that's good. I've been doing something good. So I totally get what you're saying. Kelly, yeah. You too. You've been doing a lot of cool things.
So, yeah, I've been meditating. I realized in September, it'll be 10 years since I've been meditating.
Wow.
Pretty much daily.
Wow.
And it's made a huge difference in my life. I mean, beyond. I can't imagine what I'd be like. So it's such a gift in my life. And I'm just, you know, I think it's so wonderful to also teach children this, because I know personally for me, it's just helped me so much. So I can just imagine how much it would help, you know, the younger ones. And to learn at that young age is such a gift too, because then you don't, you know, you go through life having, like you were saying, Dr. Deborah, like that toolbox, you know, so it's really, really valuable.
Yeah. Makes all the difference. Now, do you practice with your kids?
So they've seen me meditate, and I do Vedic meditation, kind of like TM. So I had heard, and I don't know if this is true, but for kids to learn that type of meditation, they have to be 10. So I've been waiting. My older one is 7. So I was hoping once he's 10, but obviously there are other forms that I should, that I could look into too, that I think he'd really benefit from.
Yeah, and the TM type meditation, at least in the first instance, is largely a concentration practice, learning to focus on one thing and nothing else. Mm-hmm. And that's what we call anchor practices or anchor games. And there's a lot of anchor games that will help develop that muscle of concentration, mm-hmm. of learning to ignore distractions and focus on one thing and nothing else, that will help him when you introduce him to this,
yes.
this type of meditation that you practice yourself. That's the other thing that's so wonderful and fun when you start to really explore mindfulness and meditation, is you start to realize, oh, it's not just one thing. There's all sorts of different types of specific things and activities and types of attention and types of emotional balance and types of compassion and kindness that we target. And so then it isn't just boring, oh, I got to feel my breathing again, but all sorts of different things and different layers like that we keep exploring.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. Wow, this is just incredible.
Oh, I can you give me one tool right now to do that? Because I am a distractor up the gazoo. Come on, help me here. Okay, I am your best student right now. Tell me what I could do at this very moment to not let my mind go off.
Well, one of the things is just to relax and realize that your mind is going to go. Even if you were the best meditator in the world, your mind is going to go off. So to give yourself a break about that. And then remember that the moment that you notice that your mind has wandered, that's a moment of mindfulness, and congratulate yourself. And then bring it back to the object. Because remember, we're building a muscle. So what you do is you think, okay, I'm just going to notice every time that my mind wanders. And when it does, I will just bring it back to the object, and I'm not going to beat myself up about it. And then sooner or later, and probably sooner, you'll start to notice that it happens less and less frequently.
Mm. And
so that's really, thank you so much for that, because that's amazing. I think so many people, when they try to meditate, they get very judgmental about themselves. Like, I can't do this.
Yes.
I don't know how to do that. And so the idea that you can actually, if it takes 1,000 times to bring yourself back, then it takes 1,000 times. If it takes 10,000 times, that's what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying, I think?
Yeah, and there's a great story about that. And the story is about, you know, somebody, if you just think, if you've ever chopped wood or if you've ever seen somebody chop wood, you know, you sit there and you whack away at that log over and over and over again, and eventually it splits. Now, who mm-hmm. knows which one of those whacks is going to do it? And you certainly, that last whack wouldn't have been successful if it hadn't been for all of the other times you tried before. And that's what it's like. So it just takes patience. And then again, this just general sense of relaxation. And because when we try to concentrate, we tend to tighten up. We tend to feel it in our forehead. We tend to feel it in our tummies. We tend to feel it in our shoulders. And when you feel that tightening up, just relaxing, that simple action of relaxing tends to just open up the mind and help us be a little bit less hard on ourselves.
I love it.
I'm just such a fan of you and your book, I have to say. So again, we're talking with Susan Kaiser Greenland, author of Mindful Games. And something that I love, and Dr. Deborah, you will love this too. On page 188, you talk about a table of themes, and it's just these beautiful reminders about acceptance and appreciation and cause and effect. And it's just, oh my gosh, it's absolutely so poetic. I mean, you write so beautifully and so calming. So I just have to, you know, point that out too. So it's like, you know, this isn't just for kids. I mean, it's really for parents as well. And we have to be that model for our kids. But this is just absolutely just beautiful.
Well, thank you so much. And that table of themes is also on my website if somebody wants to take a look. I put a lot of thought into the notion of I remind myself, which is what is the phrase that's integrated into each one of those themes. And I like including that phrase, one, because that comes from the classical definition of mindfulness, that stance of attention that I was talking about, mindful with a small m. And that's the real definition of that word in the text in which these meditation practices were first written, is to remember. And so instead of saying, I will be, you know, patient, or, you know, if we could just lighten up on ourselves and say, I remind myself to be patient, because mm-hmm. inherent in that idea is that sometimes we won't be patient, you know? And so thank you for that. And the birds in that book were drawn by a friend of mine, Lindsay DuPont, who's illustrated all of my classes and now this book. And I just think she gives these things such a aspect of fun and color mm-hmm. with her illustrations.
Very true. Wow. And I love the birds. Are they doves?
Are they what?
Are they doves? Because, you know, doves.
Some of them are. They're yeah. all different kinds of birds, and I think she just kind of made them up in her head. She's very creative.
I love that. Wow.
They are very cute. They're like little cartoons. They're so cute.
I wanted to have so many playfulness in there.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I think, you know, that's probably one of the best things about writing, right, is that you write stuff that engages people and also touches them, humors them, all those emotions. When we read something and we get all the feelings and sentiments that you can live by that, and your book does that so well. It's so beautiful.
Thank you very much.
So tell us a little bit more, because we have a few more minutes, and we would love to hear, give us a couple more tips on what would be, okay, so you're a parent of a 10-year-old. Does it make a difference if it's boy or girl? Or are they kind of similar?
No.
Okay. So you got a 10-year-old child, and child is just like so agitated, just went through the roof today, kicked out of school, but in trouble at school, getting a bad grade and all that. Give us something that you would tell a parent to kind of help your child with.
Well, the first thing I would tell the parent is to take a couple of deep breaths, his or herself, and to take the long view, because it can seem like everything is really, really rough right now. And if we can just stop and relax our shoulders, relax our foreheads, and feel our breathing or listen to the sound of the room, it has a way of broadening our perspective, and we start to see the bigger picture, that this is one moment in time and that our child is suffering. And when we see that suffering, it tends to open our heart, so that we are approaching our child with an open heart and an open mind, which we want to do. And then if our child is very upset, whether, you know, regardless of gender, regardless of age, and has a lot of excess nervous system energy, sitting still is probably not the best thing to do right off of the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Levine wrote a great book called Trauma Proofing Your Kid about different ways to deal with stress for children. And in it, he talks about how to skillfully release this excess nervous energy. And it's something that I've integrated into a couple of my games. Shake It Up in the Mindful Games book is a really good example of that. And I also wrote this kind of theory around that game. And the idea is that if somebody has a lot of excess nervous energy, the idea is you do some sort of controlled moving, even if it's like shaking. I don't know if you remember Rafi and Shake Your Sillies Out, like shaking like mm-hmm. that. You just shake in a controlled way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you stop and you do a settling activity, whether it's feeling your feet against the ground, or if you're sitting in a chair, really feeling your weight against the cushion on the chair, or feeling your breathing, or listening to the sounds in the room, or counting. If your mind is very, very busy, just focusing on a count. And then move again, and then settle, and then move again, and then settle. And that's a very skillful way of releasing this kind of nervous energy. Of course, that kind of game really requires your child to be cooperative, where when he and she is in a funk, they may or may not be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's always a good idea to teach these tools at a time that they are not upset, so that then you can just have them run through the sequence when they are upset, because then they will have seen, oh, wow, if I just shake and settle, or move or walk or dance and settle, then I'm going to start to release that nervous energy and start to feel a little bit calmer.
I'm totally applying this to my kids.
Go, Kelly. But,
no, I was just going to say I'm totally applying all this to my kids today.
and you know what's so sad? Kelly, you and I both know what's so sad about our profession is that we are taught to basically sit in an office with people mm-hmm. and help them calm down their anxiety in an office.
Yes.
And one of the things I used to love about working with teenagers and when I worked in school settings is that we were applauded for taking the kids out. So I would take groups of girls out to the park, we would go on the swing, or I would the guys, we would play basketball. Of course, I was much younger then, but it was fun to do different things that allowed their energetics to come out. And I think that that's what's sometimes hard about the therapeutic practice that we have these days. We tell our clients what to do, but there's not that many things we can do in our office. So it's wonderful to have books like this, the Mindful Games, to be able to help our clients take tools and learn how to use them when they're just on their own, like when agitated and activated, you know, parents, children, all of the above.
Yeah, I think that that's so right, and I think that that's so on. I mean, it's just counterintuitive when somebody's really upset to stay very, very still and to focus on the upset.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly not saying that we pretend that there's no reason to be upset. And I'm not saying we deny the feelings that there are. I'm just saying that we acknowledge those feelings and then we try to not shove them away, but engage in some kind of activity that helps just broaden our perspective a little bit.
So
absolutely,
we only have a few...
Kelly?
Can you still hear me?
I was going to say, Kelly, yeah, you're gonna be doing some fun things with your kids this afternoon when they come home from school.
Absolutely. So, Susan, we only have a few minutes left, and I'm wondering if you had any, first of all, where can people find your book? And then also if you have any kind of parting words or anything that you want to say, you know, as your last couple of sentences.
Oh, thank you. Well, the book can be found at the independent bookstore near you, and it can also be found online, of course, mm-hmm. and it's called Mindful Games, and the other book is The Mindful Child. And I have a website, and it's SusanKaiserGreenland.com, and the same as my name, and if you sign up for the newsletter, you'll get twice a month a note with different types of things, like this podcast will be included in that, or different games or activities or blogs and things that I put out there to help support moms and dads and teachers and clinicians who are using these out there in the world, because that's really what I love doing right now, is really supporting other people take this work out into the world. And I guess my parting bit of advice, to the extent of its advice, comes from one of my favorite teachings of mindfulness, which is that wisdom does not come from being perfect. It comes from really just being present. And all of the caregivers, I've worked now with caregivers for years, and we tend to be so hard on ourselves. We want to do the right thing so badly. We're often perfectionists. We beat ourselves up. We take responsibility for things when they go wrong. And learning to relax that a bit and realize that it's not about being perfect. It's about really being present and responsive in the moment. And then, of course, when we do make a mistake, we repair it by going back and saying to our kids or our spouse or our partners or our colleagues, "Hey, I'm sorry." So that's the wisdom
that
comes not from being perfect, but from present, is, I guess, my parting words.
I love that. Thank you so much,
that's
Susan.
That's wonderful. Yes, I love that too. Thank you.
All right. So, Susan, thank you so much again. Again, we were talking with Susan Kaiser Greenland, author of Mindful Games and The Mindful Child. So thank you again. You really helped us and lots of listeners out there.
Thank you so much. And let me know what happens when you try these out with your kids.
Yes, I will. I absolutely
okay.
will. I'll keep you posted. All right. Thanks again.
Thank you,
Susan. Bye. Have a great rest of the day.
Thanks.
We
Bye-bye.
Love you all. Next week.
Yes.
Who do we have next week, Kelly?
Next week we have Signe Whitson. She's the author of How to Be Angry. And I love this idea. It's kind of a good follow-up for this show. It's talking about how it's okay to be angry, but let's talk about ways to utilize it in an appropriate way, and especially for kids, how to channel it in a way that is healthy. So it's going to be a good show.
Okay, I'm going to be really angry next week and see what happens, okay?
All right, well, perfect. I'm going
to
cut you off on the way there.
I'm sorry to see your face tonight. I love you.
I love you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Love you all. Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.